So, Ben Weiser, are you there?
I am.
Is this story great or what? I mean, do you love this story?
It's absolutely a nice change from all the usual terrorist cases we've been having in the Federal Court of Manhattan.
Well, Ben Weiser, our colleague at the New York Times, our partner in the New York Times, is talking about the update we're going to give you now in that Russian spy story. 12 people accused of having really one of the most amazing spy gigs I've ever heard of. And we've got one of those accused 12 confessing to working for Russia's secret intelligence services. That's according to federal prosecutors. First of all, Ben, what's in this confession?
Well, we didn't use the word confession as much as just a statement. The government has said that the day that this particular defendant was arrested, his name is Juan Lazaro, last Sunday he gave a fairly lengthy statement after waiving his Miranda rights and acknowledged that that Juan Lazaro is not his true name, that the house he lived in Yonkers had been paid for by the, quote, service, which was his reference to the Russian handlers, and that although he loved his son, his teenage son, he would not violate his loyalty to the service even for his son. And he has still refused to provide the government with his true name. That's at least according to the account the government revealed yesterday.
This guy loves his country, Russia, more than he loves his own son.
That's what the government says.
Uh-huh.
It's Mother Russia.
Yeah, right. You saw these suspects in court, right?
Yeah, there were four of them in the federal magistrates' court in New York yesterday. There were also several others brought into magistrates' courts in Virginia and Boston. And as I said in a story this morning with my colleague Michael Wilson, you know, they looked very much like the normal suburban couples that they purported to be, sitting there looking somewhat bored in the court as you know, there were discussions of everything from kindergarten playdates to coded radio transmissions.
And of course, the tabloids here in New York have just gone crazy with the story. You're getting pictures and sort of discussions of lurid details of what these folks were supposed to do. But just looking at them, it does appear that there was some thought behind this whole plot to infiltrate America with these 12 individuals, and at least they're the only ones we know about, right?
That's right. There was a document released yesterday also by the government in which Moscow allegedly wrote a message, and you know, one of the secret messages in 2009 to the conspirators who lived in the Montclair house in New Jersey, and that's the one of the couples yesterday, Richard and Cynthia Murphy are their purported names. But in this message, Moscow told them the only goal and task of our service and of all of us is security of our country. All our activities are subjected to this goal, and only for reaching this goal were you dispatched to the United States, settled there, gained legal status, and expected to start striking up useful acquaintances and broadening your circle of well-placed connections, gaining information, and eventually recruiting sources.
Tell us about the safe deposit box with the crisp $100 bills that one of these defendants had access to.
Well, what the government has made clear is that even since the arrest, they believe, the prosecutors believe, that their case has gotten stronger, that they have opened up safe deposit boxes, that they've taken statements, obviously, that they've continued to do searches. And they've also made clear in court that there are other Russian, apparently Russian government officials who they describe as co-conspirators, who've not only assisted this operation and made it work, but were in place to help these people escape if it came to that. The government did say that that they had executed a search warrant this week, of the Murphys of Montclair, and among the items they recovered were 8 unmarked envelopes, each which contained $10,000 in apparently new $100 bills.
And in at least one case, a person was offered bail, although there's been discussion of flight risk for some other individuals, and we've already had somebody jumping bail after an arrest in Cyprus. What did the judge say about this particular defendant who the judge believes is not a flight risk?
It was actually very interesting. This is the judge who, Judge Ronald Ellis, a magistrate judge, very independent. The government made clear that it believed that, indeed, as you mentioned, that the escape of one of the defendants who had been arrested and bailed out in Cyprus was a good reason to hold these defendants. Judge Ellis said, you know, he wasn't going to be influenced by that. He was going to look only at this case and not at others. And Ellis is interesting because he's the judge that actually released Bernie Madoff under very harsh restrictions when Madoff was first arrested and over the government's objections. And the government made clear yesterday that they may appeal this 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 order of granting bond to one of the defendants, whose name is Vicky Pelez.
Mm-hmm.
But the judge made clear that this defendant was not like the other three before him. The other three were all under phony names, the government has said. And the judge made clear that, you know, he's not going to start releasing people if he doesn't even know who they are. In the case of Vicky Pelez, a journalist for El Diario La Prensa, a prominent Spanish-language newspaper in New York, and she has never lived under a different name, the government has acknowledged. And as far as the judge was concerned, there was no evidence, apparently, that she had been trained as a secret agent or had used any false names.
All right, and so the fact that she's not using an alias was the key there to that granting of $250,000 bail. Finally, any sense of how and if these individuals manage to work their way into the corridors of power and influence, either through partying or whatever strategy was chosen here?
First, it's not entirely clear that they did, but to the extent that they were successful, I think it was just doing what they were supposed to do. That, you know, they were known as illegals as far as the operation was concerned, and they were literally to insinuate themselves in all the sort of circles. Although it's clear from the record that some of them didn't have the kind of access that they wanted, and thus it was suggested to them that they should begin to, you know, essentially spot other potential sources for Moscow in the U.S. I might add, you know, everybody calls this a spy case. The government has not charged any espionage counts, and at this point, you know, it's really it's a question about whether they've even found any whether they obtained or turned over any classified information.
I mean, I think the most serious charge is failing to register as a foreign agent. Ben, finally, are you looking over the invite lists to maybe some of those New York Times book parties to see if any of these people showed up?
That's a very good question, but it's such a fascinating case, and as you know, it's just unfolding now, so right. We'll have to see what happens.
All right, Ben Weiser, New York Times reporter, probably feels a little bit like he's working for the New York Post this week, reporting on that spy case, 12 people accused of not spying, but something.
That's a good one.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.